Joan, I'm an alcoholic. I found the mic. I don't think I'm mumbling, so I think I'm starting off good here. Welcome to the newcomers, and congratulations, Gary, on 5 years. And thank you, Kirk, for asking me to do this and helping me walk through some fear and have the opportunity to grow a little bit tonight. I'm a little nervous, which is kind of ironic. When I was a kid, my older brothers used to pay me a dime a minute to be quiet, and I couldn't make a dollar. And so in the back of my head, as I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I could do this easy, 10 minutes. But so I'm a little nervous. But so I had four older brothers who partook in things other than alcohol. So I started with those at a very young age. And by the time I was in high school, I was a daily user. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'll get off that fast. But that's where I was when I started. And it wasn't a problem. It was fun. You know, it was not a problem. And a few years later, it started becoming a problem as things progressed and drinking got involved and car accidents and those things that happened. And when I was 18, I ended up in rehab. Well, it wasn't really rehab, Burgers Honesty. It was a lockdown nut house off of a bad acid trip. And so that was 1985, and institutions are a little bit behind in their decor. So my check-in was in this very small room, 70s decorations with striped walls as I was coming down from an acid trip. So by the end of check-in, they were convinced I needed to be there, and I did need to be there. And the next day when I woke up, I was like, I don't really need to be here. I think this was a mistake, you know, as I started coming down. But I did stay for the 28 days, but I didn't stay sober. I got out, and I didn't do what you're supposed to do. And so I was just isolated for about 6 months. And after about 6 months, I called one of my old buddies and started smoking again. And I'm like, I'll be fine if I just never drop acid again. It'll be okay. And, you know, I never did drop acid again until the very first time somebody asked me if I wanted some. And I said, well, yes, I do, you know, because that's who I am. That's the type of alcoholic and addict I am. And, you know, I knew that I had a problem, and I knew that I was alcoholic. That was, my family was alcoholic. It was all around me. I struggled with that manageability thing. You know, I really thought I could find a way, you know, and I just didn't think I could ever get sober. So I spent like the next 16 years of my life trying to manage consequences. And, you know, I had a lot of fun along the way, you know. There was a lot of good times, but, you know, year after year of doing the things that alcoholics do takes a toll on a person, you know. Every day the soul gets eaten away a little bit more, and, you know, a little bit less is left. And, you know, a few more trips to jail and a few more cars wrecked. And, you know, never – I hear people when they come into the program being like, I want to get my life back. I never got one, you know. I never accumulated anything because I was just drinking and doing drugs the whole time. And so, you know, towards the end, I got yet another DUI. And, you know, most people, I don't know, but I don't guess normal people. I found out a few years into my sobriety in H&I. And if you don't know this and you're as shocked as I was, I'm glad you're all sitting down, that most normal people never get arrested. They never go to jail. Not once. I found that out when I was a few years sober. It was shocking to me. And so when I was leaving Las Colinas, I had the cab driver drop me off at the liquor store because that's where I was on my way to when I passed out in my car. Because I was out of cigarettes and I was out of beer, so that's where you go, is to the liquor store. So I had him drop me off so that I could get a 12-pack and a pack of cigarettes and figure out what I was going to do. You know, I got to get my car back. So I had stuff I had to take care of, but first things first, I had to get to the liquor store. And that was, you know, for me, fortunately, kind of the beginning of my end. You know, I certainly didn't know that night when I was sitting in jail, like, oh, yay, this is going to be awesome that this happened to me. But it, you know, it sent me through the court system, and it made me come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I drank through my first several months of my very long court-appointed appointments and AA things, and I was at one of my court-appointed sessions, and there was somebody in there sharing about he had done 10 years in jail for being in an accident that somebody died, and his son had basically had the top of his skull taken off. And the man had only been out 6 months and was sitting in the DUI class because he had drank, and he was passed out in his car. He didn't drive, but they still had arrested him. And I'm like, what is wrong with that guy? Like, what a mess. So when I left that night, I went and stopped at the liquor store, because after DUI class, that's where you go, is to the liquor store on your way home, right? And about a halfway through my tequila bottle, stuff started coming into my head that I had done, and that the people I had hurt, and that illusion that I had for so many years of trying to manage that I wasn't hurting anybody but myself was crushed. I saw the truth in that moment, and there's nothing worse than seeing the truth when you're drunk, you know? There's nothing worse than that, and I'm like, I am that man. And that impending doom, into the bottom of my heart, I believe the next time I was not going to be able to buy myself out of it or lie myself out of it or get out of it. That next time, whatever it was going to be really, really bad. And so you'd think that's when I got sober, but it wasn't quite when I got sober. The next day I got up and I went to work and I stopped at the liquor store and I bought a lot. And my intention was to drink until it was over. And so I started drinking on Thursday night and came to on Sunday. And I don't remember from basically Friday to Sunday. And I remember that feeling of coming to and being so distraught that it didn't work, that I was there, and I got to do this again. And I crawled into bed, and the next day I got up, and I crawled my way to work. And I got sober on October 8th, 2001. I get to work, and everybody's talking about all this stuff, and I had no idea what they're talking about. We had went to war that weekend, and I did not know. That was the state of my touch of reality, you know, and had no idea. And so the very next day, I went to my court-appointed AA meeting, and I don't know why. I was never one of those sign it. For whatever reason, something inside was like, oh, I'm going to get in trouble and sign my own card, you know. And I went to this meeting that I'd never gone to before because I was too drunk to go to the one I usually go to. And this man said that if all you want is to stop drinking, you could do that by going to a meeting every day. And I didn't know at that time that he was talking about how you sell yourself short by not doing the steps and all the wonderful things that happen when you actually involve yourself in the program. But at that moment, that's all I wanted. That was just like all I wanted. It wasn't even that I really wanted to stop drinking. I wanted the bad stuff to stop happening. And I finally made the connection that the bad stuff was from the drinking. And that night, I did not go to the liquor store. I went home. And the next day, I had my court-appointed meeting with my counselor. And in the morning, I'm like, I'm going to come clean with him. And by 5 o'clock, I'm like, well, maybe not. Maybe he's not the right person. And on my drive over there, I heard Social Distortion song about the, you know, the ball and chain. And I went in and I just bawled. And that was the beginning for me. And I'm so grateful to that man. He's the one who started me on my path to my higher power. He told me to go home and get on my knees and pray that night. And in the morning, you know, pray, thank God for being sober, and ask him in the morning to keep me sober. And I went home that night and got on my knees, and I felt like a hypocrite, and that's all I was feeling. And this voice came over me and said, being a hypocrite is the least of your problems. And it was, you know, and that's where it started for me. And so I've since then, every day, no matter where I am in the world, every morning and every night, I'm on my knees. And I turn to God in between. And, you know, I got a sponsor, not because I wanted to get a sponsor or do the steps. I got a sponsor just so everybody would stop asking me if I had a sponsor, you know. And And, you know, I did the steps. I had no intention of doing them because I'm the person. I'm on step one. I can't do step eight, you know. And they're like, you don't have to do step eight. And my sponsor gave me one of the best things I ever heard is, if you do what you need to do today, you'll have what you need when you get there. And that's been my experience with everything. If I just do what I need to do today, I have what I need when I get there. And that's the result of this program. I hear sometimes people talk about you can't be in fear and faith, and that always bothered me because I'm such a fear-ridden person. A couple years into my sobriety, a woman that I love dearly said, it's the faith that lets me walk through the fear, and that I could grab into. That's how I could stand up here today, and I answered Kirk's call instead of just blowing it off and pretending I didn't get it, or calling back and lying instead. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to show up and do it. And so if you're new, you know, I just hope that somebody says something to you, or you hear something, or that your bottom is bad and crappy and you're desperate so that you're willing to do anything. So thank you.